Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Wealth Strategies Group at Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, offering financial planning strategies that are tailored to clients' needs. Canandaigua National Bank and Trust, investing in you.
From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made this past March in Louisville, Kentucky. High school teacher Paul Barnwell presented a scenario to his junior English students. He described it in a recent issue of The Atlantic magazine. Barnwell told the students, "Your boyfriend or girlfriend has committed a felony during which other people were badly harmed. Should you or should you not turn him or her into the police?" Barnwell writes that the class immediately erupted with commentary. It was obvious, they said, that loyalty was paramount. Not a single student said that they would snitch. They were unequivocally unconcerned about who was harmed in this hypothetical scenario. Now, Barnwell was troubled. He had used this discussion as an introduction to an assignment about whether Americans should pay more for ethically produced food. He found that the students were engaged. They enjoyed the back and forth. And in fact, they were not even used to talking about morality and ethics in school at all. And the teacher wondered, why not? Well, here in Rochester, a new school aims to address that kind of question. It's called the Rochester River School, and it would employ the concept known as humane education. Those kind of discussions of morality and ethics would be happening all the time. But it's not a school yet. Co-founder Joel Helfrich has a pile of ideas, but not necessarily a pile of money. That always helps. And on the way to creating this K-12 school, he's discovered that there are some issues to deal with. This hour, we look at his vision and the process that he's been going through. So my guests include the co-founder of the Rochester River School, Joel Helfrich. Welcome back, Joel.
Thanks for having me.
Also here is Dr. David Hirsch. He's a professor at the Warner Graduate School of Education and Human Development at the University of Rochester. Dr. Hirsch, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks.
Joel, I just want to know what you make of that story. You know, right off the bat here, you have this teacher, and I want to read a little bit more from what he said, and I'll get your take on it here. He went on that essay to say the following, quote, "As my students seem to crave more meaningful discussions and instruction relating to character, morality, and ethics, it struck me how invisible these issues have become in many schools. By omission, are U.S. schools teaching their students that character, morality, and ethics aren't important in becoming productive, successful citizens," end quote. And this is from reporter Jessica Leahy. Quote, "According to Gallup polling, 90% of adults support the teaching in public schools of honesty, acceptance of others, and moral courage, among other character traits. What adults hope occurs in schools, however, is in sharp contrast to observations provided by teens in schools themselves." What do you think, Joel?
I mean, I think that's a great story. And I think it shows what's possible in terms of education when you bring in ethics and morals into the discussion. I just spent a good portion of last month reading a new book that just came out this year as part of the 150th anniversary of the founding of the SPCA. It's called The Gospel of Kindness. And what it does is it shows in the post-Civil War world, especially in the United States, there was a real effort in every single state and in the Philippines and Cuba and India and elsewhere to instill humane education into the curriculum. And so you might be building birdhouses one week. Another week, you might be helping with strays at a shelter. And, you know, those are the types of things, building in empathy and compassion, along with, you know, really tough issues about morals and our values. And I think that more of our schools should be doing more of that work.
You know, I think when you were here a couple of years ago with your co-founder, a lot of people heard your message then and figured this will get on the fast track. It's an idea that a lot of people gravitated toward. And I think what we want to explore this hour is what you have encountered, what you didn't know 2 years ago, to how much wiser you may feel about the process today. And I asked Dr. Hirsch to come as well because so much of his work has looked at educational systems, charter schools. I mean, I suspect Joel might not have thought early on that charter would be a word to enter. But before we get there, Joel, when it comes to humane education, that's a word that I used and you, I know you use as well. It has an actual meaning that it is a concept. It's not just, you know, nicer education or moral. Humane education means what?
So to me, it, you know, is it's taking sustainability or teaching for sustainability education, and it's adding in the animal ethics component so that you have, at the end of the day, human rights, you have environmental stewardship, you have animal ethics, and then you wrap into that various cultural concerns. And so for me, that kind of helps form the basis of humane education in the present. And it's, and again, it's not that much different than what was done 100 years ago at the turn of the 20th century. We seem to have lost that by World War II, And I think that there are a number of people and a number of organizations that are trying to bring that back into the curriculum.
Joel is someone who has lived, you're a native of where? Where'd you grow up, Joel?
I was born in Albany, but I for most of my adulthood, I've lived in Rochester.
So really, I was going to say Rochester native, but he's a Rochester resident, and he has taught at the college level at a number of universities and local schools. And so this is a vision that came together a few years ago for a humane education school in Rochester. And this is not the kind of school that wouldn't, you know, teach common subjects, for example. Some people might think that, but I think back to my high school, for example. I took one of those elective either business or economics classes. And if a student at the River School was learning about economics, my guess is they would learn about the fundamentals of economics, but also how that system impacts people who are producing goods, for example. Right.
No. So we'd be looking at sustainability, for example. So not only, you know, the economic development, but also what does it mean for the earth and what does it mean for people in terms of social justice and so forth. So I could imagine an economics class that teaches, obviously, micro and macroeconomics and other principles of economics and economic theory, but then also applies it, that brings in sustainable community development and other issues, and maybe micro lending, maybe social justice. You know, who knows what could be folded into that. But our school will teach the basics of reading, writing, and math, and have ELA and so forth, and teach to the regents. But we expect to be able to fold a lot of this additional curriculum into the larger vision for the school.
Dr. Hirsch, the 2012 Josephson Report Card on Ethics of American Youth found the following. According to their study, 57% of teens in this country state that successful people do what they have to do to win, even if it means cheating. 24% believe it's okay to threaten or hit someone when angry. 31% believe physical violence is a big problem in their schools. 52% reported cheating at least once on a school test. 49% of students reported being bullied or harassed in a manner that seriously upset them. What does that say to you about sort of the state of the educational system right now in this country?
Well, what that tells me is that schools are really focusing on individual development, preparing students, and this will not be a surprise to you that this is how I think about this, that we're preparing students to do well on tests, a very competitive environment, do what you can, not look out for others. And what I think that needs to change, and what Joel's talking about, is a school where students are in a part of a community where they work together to try to look at solve problems. I noticed he talked about place-based education, so the notion that you're looking at how to think through how you live sustainably in a particular place, that is Rochester, New York. He's looking at problem-based, where students are looking at trying to raise problems. How do we live sustainably? How do we deal with issues of social justice in terms of raising food, etc.? And then getting students to be part of the larger community. And if we do those kinds of things, we have a chance of actually teaching people how to relate to one another, how to care for one another, that it's, you know, that you're responsible for not just yourself but for others. But we don't do that in schools because the focus is so much on how do we get students to, you know, I realize I'm oversimplifying a bit, but how do we prepare those students to pass those tests rather than how do we develop caring students who live in a community and take care of one not of just one another, but also of others, of, you know, and think about the effect on the environment. And Joel's ideas on this, you know, you could so easily make a wonderful school that raises the right questions, that gets students to think deeply and thoughtfully about these issues and really make a difference in the lives of children. And it's a shame that that's not come about. I really think his vision is so necessary in these times of climate change and toxins in our environment and all the other issues we face environmentally.
If you want to learn more about the school, it's rochesterriverschool.org, simple website. And, you know, Dr. Hirsch brings up testing, which is its own issue that could take, take a week. aside from the fact that both of my guests on this panel, I think, would like to see the emphasis on standardized tests change, Joel, what kind of plan would you have for your school to operate within the system as it currently exists?
I mean, we're going to clearly take the region's exams. Where we haven't gotten to is the fact that we are now creating a charter school. We had thought for 2 years that we would create a district school and that the district would find a champion for our school. And when that didn't happen, we were basically, for lack of a better term, forced to go the charter route. And in so doing, you know, we recognized that you're likely not going to be able to create a new charter school without doing at least Regents testing. And so while we'd initially thought we'd have a 5 through 12 school, we are now starting in kindergarten, and we will add a grade each year, so our school will ultimately be a K through 12 school. In New York State, children begin testing at grade 3, mm-hmm. I believe. And so we wanted to give our children the best chance for doing well on those tests, and obviously the best chance for the school to be successful as well. So we're starting in kindergarten, and we expect to pursue the Regents curriculum, like a lot of the other regular schools and district schools in the state.
Jill, 2 years ago, let me back up and ask you. You just said you expected to find, or you hoped to find, a champion within the Rochester City School District, and that didn't really happen. Why?
Maybe
you can't answer, but do you have a suspicion about why?
No, I mean, I don't have a direct answer. I mean, I could take guesses as to why that happened, but I think it was pretty clear that the district does not, as far as I understand it, have a pathway for opening new schools. So, you know, if you look at what happened with the University of Rochester and East High School, there was a state-level model, EPO, Educational Partnership Opportunity, mm-hmm. or whatever it's called, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where the University of Rochester could essentially follow a set of guidelines and fill out an application, essentially, that spelled out how they would operate the school. And there is no similar thing to open a new district school in the Rochester City School District. So I think that partly has something to do with it. I think, the change in leadership has had a lot to do with it. I think the desire on the part of the district to, especially focus on certain aspects of our school that they found either most beneficial or that they thought would work the best, I think that had something to do with it. But it was a really difficult time for the last 2 years to try and find a champion in the district for our school.
And so now you've decided that what you've got to do is go the charter route, right?
Correct.
And 2 years ago, would you have expected that would happen?
No, I mean, this has been a huge learning curve. I think that when I first appeared on the show in 2014 in December, you know, I think I naively said, this is great. We're, by next year, we're going to, be really far along. And in a lot of ways, we have evolved quite a bit in the last 2 years. I mean, I think our school is, the way we've proposed it, is vastly different than it was then. But I did not expect to get so little far ahead with the district as we have.
All right. So I want to ask Joel and David about where the progress is now, especially as it relates to charter schools. And I kind of want to set a few points first here, because whenever charter schools come up, David knows, it's a little polarizing.
We're not going there.
It's a little polarizing for some of our audience, and I understand why.
Yeah.
I could show you dozens of emails that I get every time we talk charter schools mm-hmm. from listeners who say, look, my brother teaches in a mm-hmm. charter school. He loves what he does. Mm-hmm. He bends over backwards for those kids. And I just want to make clear, I understand that. And I not only respect it, but I think the idea, at least the idealism behind the notion of charter schools, mm-hmm. right. whether or not it's been achieved in practice, is understandable and laudable. This idea of more of a laboratory, more of an idea. You know, you could see a river school. If it works out, Joel wouldn't be surprised if other Rochester District schools mm-hmm. says, we're going to try this. We're going to bring this in. We're going to teach this way. We're going to do more experiential, this kind of thing. In that way, charter schools have become a lightning rod, David Hirsch. And what I want to do is I want to listen to what we saw on HBO this past weekend. John Oliver took aim at charter schools. It was not a flattering picture that he painted. And I want to listen to one of John Oliver's comments, and we'll get some of David's remarks about whether this is fair, and then whether that hope of idealism for charter schools, is it still achievable? So this is John Oliver. What he's doing in this clip is he's talking about Ohio. And he is talking about White Hat Management, which is a charter school management company in Ohio. They become a big player there. And here he is talking about a lack of transparency. Oliver saying there's a lack of transparency. It's become kind of a scam. So here's what he said about White Hat Charter Management.
That man's company, White Hat Management, worked under contracts where each charter would pay 95% or more of its government funding to White Hat, which, as a private company, isn't obligated to provide the same level of transparency as, say, a school district. So taxpayers could have little idea how that money was being spent. And who can say if that's a good system or not? All I know is White Hat ran 32 of the lowest performing schools in the state. And if you do essentially the same terrible thing more than 30 times in a row, you're not a management company. You're basically Billy Joel's Greatest Hits Volumes 2 and 3.
David Hirsch, he's saying that that lack of transparency mm-hmm. hurts taxpayers mm-hmm. and that publicly funded but privately run is a good way to hide bad performance and for money to pile up without much accountability. Is that fair?
It's fair in Ohio,
okay,
which I've done a little bit of research on, and there it's very not transparent, and there's a lot going on in terms of money being misdirected away from the schools into people's pockets. So Ohio's an easy state to criticize. I think that the issues in New York are different. What I'd like to see, the original idea of charter schools came from the American Federation of Teachers, and Al Shanker, the president, proposed charter schools as a way for school districts, public school districts, to open innovative schools mm-hmm. Based on a response and input from parents and teachers. And in some ways, that's the way that School Without Walls started in Rochester and became part of the Performance Consortium schools. And those schools have to be as transparent as all the rest of the public schools. What it is a different model in which teachers use a different curriculum and in which, in fact, this kind of school that Joel's talking about could start. What's a little bit ironic, and I don't think Joel knows this, but at least we haven't talked about it, in the year 2001, myself and Dr. Camille Martina in the University of Rochester School of Medicine, we had a grant for 7 years in which we worked with schools in the region on teaching about environmental health. Exactly, we were teaching about social justice, environmental justice, lead poisoning, history of environmental problems, et cetera. We were, in fact, doing these things, and Manny Rivera, the superintendent at the time, who I knew well, said, hey, would you two like to run a school in Rochester on environmental health?
You know, what happened?
Well, we thought it was a great idea. Of course, I'm a professor at the University of Rochester. I really don't have time to start a school.
So
it died for lack of ability for us to pull it off. And I don't know whether, so we didn't take the first step. And whether it would have come about or not, I don't know.
But there was a history of interest in this kind of idea.
There's a history of interest in the district, in this idea, for the exact same reason that Joel talking about. And that's the kind of things that we need, is schools that are transparent. And again, charter schools originally, and they're being, were supposed to be models, and they were supposed to be ways for public schools to learn about, for charter schools to try experiments, to do things differently that would be useful for public schools to learn from. And yet that's not the way that they've turned out. In fact, it's really become a competitive market. And what charter schools have done in many districts is led to the destruction of the district, because they become 40, 50, 70, 80, 90% of the district is now charter schools. And it's leading to the death of public schools. So there's these other huge issues around charter schools. And I don't want to get into a debate about charter schools, because
sure,
that would misdirect us from the conversation that we need to have, is how do we start innovative schools in Rochester and elsewhere? It seems we can't do that given the current model, because how do you do it with the district? We don't know. There's no process for that to occur. And the other route is charter schools, but you have issues with fundraising and all sorts of other problems with starting a charter school, and it also doesn't accomplish the goals you want, because you want to support the public schools, and you want to support unionized teachers, et cetera. And so the choices, right now we don't have a good choice or a good path to developing innovative schools.
Yeah, I think Joel's choosing the route that he thinks is most viable while trying to sort of keep that sense of idealism. What I wanted to explain, and the reason I played the Oliver clip is a lot of people were talking about it. Mm-hmm. And I think it does represent some of the cynicism that some people have. Again, I'm not endorsing any cynicism. I'm just kind of observing the landscape that some people are cynical about charter schools. So, Joel, first of all, to any of those cynics out there about charter schools, you heard that clip in particular about lack of transparency, et cetera. What would you say to people who would be worried that, hey, I like your idea, but do you have to do it this way, and would you be transparent?
So basically, there's not 1 week that goes by where I don't get some criticism. Somebody who, just without any kind of knowledge about what we're trying to do, simply just attacks us for the fact that we're going to try to open a charter school. And I hear those complaints. You know, I have a problem myself with the large amounts of cash that are flowing from philanthropists into charter schools. I have a problem with the lack of unionized labor, the wages. I mean, the kind of drilling into students, the curriculum. I mean, there's just, I think, and I don't know this as much as David does, but I think there's a real, there's a series of problems that I have with charters. But I think you're exactly right. You know, this is our best path forward, is to attempt to create a charter school. And at the end of the day, if we are successful and we get authorized by the state, my personal hope is that, you know, our teachers and our staff will decide if it's best for them to unionize, and that we will be a model for the district and a resource for the district, not only in terms of the programs that we do, but also eventually maybe even in terms of our physical space. So the building that we use, or that we, you know, renovate through some sort of adaptive reuse, or that we construct at some point down the line after, again, another capital campaign. So, you know, we tried for 2 years to be a district school. We are trying to be transparent in the present. We have been forward with anybody who asks any question, we respond. And what's more, our school is actually, it seems like, being supported. So one of the things in Rochester that we noted from the beginning is that it's easy to say that there's a need for great new schools in the district. But it's a different thing to say, actually, people are demanding that your school open. And so we launched a online community survey. And within a month and a half, we had 515 people responded, 60% of whom are in the district. And many of those are parents. And they're saying, you know, we will send our kid to our school, or your school, if it opens. We've even had people from outside the district say that they would come to our school. So we've had, what's amazing is we're starting to think about, you know, could at least our high school be a magnet school, if that's possible, so that, you know, 50% or so of the students would come from outside of the district. So I've had parents from Pittsford Mendon say that they want to send their kids to our school. I had a high school student from Pittsford Sutherland say she wants to come to our school. We've had people contact us from New Jersey. I have a woman who works in SOTUS and has a house there. She said she would move to Rochester if our school opened for her 2-year-old daughter. So there's a demand for what we're trying to do. And right now we're in this position where we need to try and move this forward somehow.
All right, so here's what I want to do. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to work your phone calls in next as we continue the discussion on what happens next. So we've laid the groundwork for where things stand with the Rochester River School. And again, Joel Helfrich is here. He's the co-founder of the school. It's rochesterriverschool.org. Couldn't go through sort of the creation of a traditional district school, going the charter route now. Dr. David Hirsch is here, who has been, I think, covering and teaching and studying these issues as long as anyone I know. And so we're talking about this process. And now that you understand sort of where Joel is, if you have questions about charters, if you're one of the sort of the cynics or the skeptics about charters, this is a good chance to call with any questions you may have. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. I'm going to be as blunt as I can be with questions about, you know, what kind of funding they need and what the process is like. So all of that straight ahead after this short break on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Eamon in Rochester, first up. Go ahead, Eamon.
Yeah, so I think I like the idea of the project. I am concerned, though, about using the charter model. I know many people within the district who have tried for many years to create their own schools or create models within existing buildings, and it takes them as many as 10 years sometimes to have that become a reality. And just because something doesn't happen in 2 years, something as monumental as creating a school, I don't think that that's a good excuse to go towards the charter model, because there are a lot of consequences for that. We have declining enrollment in the district, and you're going to further put pressure on that and create fewer dollars for the same infrastructure and buildings, which I'm very concerned about. So how do you address the fact that there is this big modernization going on right now with the infrastructure in the district, and you're creating further pressures on the funding and the capacity issues of maintaining that infrastructure when enrollment continues to decline because of the opening of charters?
Eamon, stay there. Good questions. Joel Helfrich, go ahead.
I mean, what I can say is that there is, again, no path forward. You know, as you rightly pointed out, we know of a number of different people that have tried to open new schools within the district and or programs within the district, and they've either gotten nowhere or they've had those programs cannibalized or destroyed. And, you know, our board voted and decided that it would be one thing if we were told by the district, hey, you know, you've got a year, you've got 6 months to come up with a proposal similar to what the University of Rochester did with East High School. And at the end of that time, you know, we will work with you to open your school. But we have no way of knowing whether that, you know, will ever come. And it might take 10 years. And to be honest, I don't think that, you know, we can wait for the type of curriculum that we're proposing for another 2 years, 4 years, 10 years. And I think that, you know, I understand the problems of the district as best I can as an outsider. I feel as if, you know, we're really given no choice.
All right, Dr. Hirsch, hold on, Eamon. Let Dr. Hirsch, okay. And then you can follow up as well. Dr. Hirsch, go ahead.
I just want to bring up and ask the question of Joel, whether the district is at all considering whether his school could be part of the Performance Standards Consortium. Now, this would be an alternative to the two directions that he's trying to do, getting in the city school district as a magnet school. The Performance Standards Consortium is 28 schools in New York State, most in New York City, begun in the early 1990s and given a waiver from the regions by then Commissioner Sobel. And School Without Walls is the one member of the Performance Standards Consortium in Rochester, but there's also one in Ithaca and then others downstate. And as I understand it, is that there's the possibility of expanding the consortium. And that if the district would just say you could be a consortium school, it would get them a waiver from the regents exams, and it would allow for then the innovation that needs to be done in schools, and it would allow for both the teachers and to run the school, teaching the school, but for outsiders to have an impact and co-director be involved in other creative ways. Okay. But I don't know why. It seems to me that's another possibility if the district would consider it.
Joel?
This was raised to us as a potential path forward. And my understanding for the last 2 years has been that they weren't adding schools to the consortium.
Okay.
So Dan Dramasich and some of the other folks, the former principal of School Without Walls, and some other folks have let us know that that wasn't going to be an option. And in fact, we knew of another school downstate in New York City that was proposed to be open in 2018, and they're not going to go forward with it, but they had looked into that as well and been told the same thing. So if there is an opportunity to expand the consortium, I mean, we would certainly be open to that. Again, we are not, you know, about transparency, about, you know, being good neighbors, about, you know, running a good school and or a foundation that we've created. We're willing to work with anybody. We've operated in that way from 2014 to the present. If we can agree with and work with an organization or a business or a district, we're going to do so. But that just hasn't been the case. Despite our trying.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Eamon. You want to follow up there? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, maybe that's telling you something. I would hope that the elected officials the school board who are supposed to represent the community and most directly accountable would want to work with you. And if they don't, then they're not feeling the pressure for this school. And, you know, I think that 2 years, it's frustrating when something doesn't happen. But a lot of the buildings that are refurbishing right now have been around for over 100 years. You know, you're not just making a commitment for 5, 10 years. This is a generational thing. So I think, you know, rushing into something feeling like it has to happen now, we're talking about decades and, you know, people's lives. I feel like it shouldn't be something that feels like it has to happen in the moment. You need that buy-in if you want to move forward.
I want to push back on something you just said. You know, this is just my opinion. I'm not representing the school in this way, but the idea that our elected school board members are somehow responsive to requests to meet, emails, anything like that, I think that just hasn't been our, that has not been our, you know, experience. So, you know, when I first met with Van White, that was in October or thereabouts of 2014, and he said he was interested in best practices. And we said, look, we're trying to create a new school that's based on existing models that work elsewhere. And those are models that are not only district schools, but also charter schools and private schools. And we think that they're going to work here in Rochester. And so he said, well, look, put something together and we'll allow you to do a presentation before the board in April or so of 2015. And that time came and we reached out through phone calls and through emails to all the board members. And there was an overarching silence. And in fact, the only way in which we were able to ever get through to the board members was through intermediaries. So we have elected officials who are not responsive to people, whether they're parents, people who live in the district, teachers, or what have you. And that's a real problem for me. It doesn't mean I hate these people or I'm against them, but the idea that they somehow have their finger on the pulse, when I have parents that are demanding that our school open, and we have people like David and others who are saying, you know, this should work in Rochester, and it's based on 7 years in one case where it did work. I'm not rushing into this. I've been plodding away at this on my own time, on my own dime, with no paycheck.
And can I just jump in and say, Joel, in the intervening time since you started the process, they have, gotten on board another school idea, which is very close to the opposite of the River School model, which is a military academy. And that does look like it's going to happen.
Right.
So maybe what the message is they just find more of a value in a military academy approach than a River School and humane education approach right now.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that the military school was given a platform and a stage, and whether or not the school board supports it or not, they were given a lot of kind of leeway to do what they did. They created a commission to try and figure out what the public wanted, and we did all that for free and found, you know, an overwhelming support for our school. This is not something we've been rushing into. We have a lot of, actually, we have three board members who are district teachers. So if, you know, those folks are saying that this is a necessary thing and we've been working on it and we continue to work on it, plot away at it, this isn't something that we take lightly, nor are your concerns anything we take lightly. I wanted this to be a district school and, you know, we will move forward as a charter school. I told David before we met here today that our board has said that if at some point in the future the district changes its leadership or decides that it's going to figure out a pathway for new schools to open, that we will turn back toward the district at that point.
Let me read an email from a listener named Alexis who just wants to know, is this an example of pay to play? And I think what she's asking is, do you simply not come in with enough money to get attention? I have no idea. I'm certainly not at all making an allegation. I don't know that anybody is, but Alexis is emailing to ask, you know, essentially, do you need more money? So let me just be blunt and ask you, Joel. I mean, when it comes to, I asked you to come on this program because I've been fascinated watching the process of the effort to create a new school, but I know it hasn't been easy. And it is, to me, this is instructive to see what actually happens. When it comes to money, has that been a barrier?
It has. I mean, we launched a fundraising campaign late last month. We are trying to raise funds in order to hire some consultants. We want to give ourselves the best chance of getting authorized by the state. And unfortunately, in order to do that, you need to hire people who have routinely done this work time and again. Not only to help you with certain aspects, whether it's budgeting for the school or writing certain parts of the application, which is, you know, the last two applications I read within the last month were between 500 and 600 pages. Right. And some of that material is repetitious, but it's a pretty big lift. And so, you know, we've had to reach out to foundations, different businesses. We have a crowdfunding campaign on CrowdRise for the school. And we are slowly getting the money that we need.
Do you have an idea right now? Do you have a goal?
We have a $50,000 goal. And to me, that's crazy. I would rather have, you know, figure out a way to do this on a pro bono basis. But I just don't think you can open a new charter school without trying to find some kind of money to hire those consultants that you really need. And what's amazing is I actually talked to a foundation earlier this month, and they had a charter school that they were working with, and it was, their quote was for $100,000 to hire an outfit out of Buffalo. So we will, we've received some money from a local foundation, actually two local foundations. We've got a grocery store that's given us some money, we've gotten a little bit of money from, you know, different people. The Red Fern restaurant in town gave a $500 donation. So we've been kind of putting things together where we can, and we're close to our goal if everybody who said they're going to contribute comes through at the end of the month.
Are you hoping, though, this ends up looking more like a Bernie Sanders $27 a person versus one or two big chunks?
Yeah, I mean, on CrowdRise, if you can go on there today and donate, a minimum donation is $10. And, you know, we could get there if enough people donated 10 bucks to make this happen. So it would be great at the end of the day to say we had, you know, 400 people or 500 people or our 1,500 followers on Facebook who have liked our page say, hey, you know, we're going to give a little bit of money to make this happen.
All right. So I want to ask David just to kind of weigh in as well, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. But just to close that point, I want to make clear for our listeners, we talk a lot on this program about various causes. Poverty, different efforts around our community to do different things. You're going to hear organizations represented from time to time who do have needs. WXXI does not endorse particular charitable causes, but I am almost constantly, this week especially, listeners have complained that I haven't given enough information about how to contact people. So listen, again, not as an endorsement, but in case anybody wanted to get in touch, Joel, what's the easiest way for them to get in touch then?
To get in touch with me?
Just to learn more about, I guess, the cause and contribution.
So, you know, our website is pretty detailed. I mean, there's a lot of information on there at rochesterriverschool.org. And we're on Facebook at Rochester River School. And if anyone wants to reach out to me directly, you can email me at info@rochesterriverschool.org.
David Hirsch, does this sound pretty common to you? $50,000 to at least get the help needed to put the kind of application and plan together. You know, to some people out there, that may seem like a lot of money. To others think, well, that should be within reach. But does that sound pretty common to you?
It sounds pretty common. And, you know, the one difference between the Rochester River School and many of the charter schools that are starting is that this charter schools that are following what I call the corporate model, which is a particular administrative model, a particular kind of curriculum, discipline, again, focusing on test scores. And they get a lot of money from outside organizations. And I was looking at this last week when I knew that I was going to be on and on your show. I looked up uncommon schools. And there's some uncommon schools in Boston, Newark, New Jersey, New York City, and Troy. And they got $2.5 million along with from Eli Broad Foundation, which also gave some money to Harlem Success. They got $1.7 million from New Schools Venture Fund, which is essentially a fund to start charter schools. The federal government, I think what I learned this morning, was gave $5.2 million to uncommon schools. The Carnegie Foundation gave $1.5 million. So they, you know, the charter schools we're seeing in Rochester are getting money from large foundations that are promoting a particular kind of education in the millions of dollars range. And here, you know, Joel's talking about
$50,000,
but he's not getting that. But particular models of education are getting funded, and particular models are not getting funded. You know, and he's also, I mentioned before coming on that I actually, even though I'm critical of, have been critical of charter schools, 15 years ago was asked to work with a some families in the Northeast neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they said, they came to me and they said, look, we know you, and a lot of people came to me. I've started several schools, but private schools in the past. And they came to me and they said, we know you have expertise in this. Would you help us? And I said, look, I've turned down everybody that's asked me about starting a charter school, even friends who have started charter schools. But it was clear to me, they said, only 10% of our students graduate. We really need reforms. We need a school. And we want a school based on Deweyan principles. We want to focus on environmental issues. We want to use this kind of approach. But and I wrote this 600-page proposal for them. And
600 pages.
Yeah, and then they didn't get funded. And I said, you're not going to get funded because they had a double bind. It's one, they had to have a building. When they submitted the proposal, they said, well, we won't give you a charter because you don't have a building. And they said, well, we can't get money because we don't have a charter. So, like, what
do
we
do? It's a chicken and an egg, right?
Yeah,
right.
The chicken and egg. And so, of course, that never started. So, you know, if you have money and you have those resources, and some people do and some people don't, it makes a difference.
All right. So the last 10 minutes, I want to work through your comments and questions. And we're going to try to do them as sort of not rapid fire, but as quickly as we can. I'm going to read one email and then back to the phones we go. Dan writes to the program and says, Evan, charter school has become a swear word to a lot of people, but there is probably as much variability between charters as there is between public schools. Not all schools, public or charter, are succeeding or failing as a monolith. So when we get down to it, what's the problem? My sense is that the idea of running a school or a district as if it were a business, the capitalization of education, is one of the main underlying problems. Whether you've got states funneling a lot of money to schools and then taking away their traditional funding to spend it, quote, more profitably elsewhere, or you've got private school charters sucking up tax dollars like unaccountable vacuums, the ideology underneath is much the same, running a system of education as if it were a business. That seems to be the problem. Do you agree, Joel Helfrich?
Yes.
Okay, simple as that. So Dan Cosine. David Hirsch?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I do want to say this, though. You know, we realized 2 years ago that, you know, in order to be successful, we would have to have community support, we would have to have a solid curriculum, and you have to have a business plan, you know. So mm-hmm. I don't think that you can, you know, divorce yourself from that. But in terms of the way in which the school operates and runs and the way in which you teach students, I mean, I think that going with a business model is not at all mm-hmm. what we plan to do.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls now. Hal in Dansville. Go ahead, Hal.
Yes, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I saw that John Oliver segment, too.
Yeah.
What I was calling about was how existing public schools, especially in rural areas such as our area, takes an enormous part of the community's budget. And so if you can promote environmental education in existing public schools, that's a real plus. So my experience, which was 16 years ago, for 3 years, I organized, after several years of talking with a local superintendent, I was referred to a middle school principal who allowed us to organize a free, more or less free, an Earth Week program that started Monday morning and ended Friday afternoon, for three successive years, and his role, the middle school principal, was to coordinate and interface and basically be the gatekeeper and the normalizer and the inviter and convener. And my role as a volunteer parent was to get all the ingredients together for such a program, whether it be wildlife rehabilitators or solid waste recycling people or, you know, water experts, or in my case, I spoke on topics ranging from, you know, human population growth to extinction of wildlife or extirpation of wildlife and things related to climate change. So this worked very well for 3 years, and then the middle school principal moved on and the gate closed. So what I did find, it was very hard to get teachers in the school to volunteer time because, well, that's just a further commitment, it seemed, of theirs that would be ongoing. And yet they did participate in this program, and I would generally say it was successful. It even led to planting of trees on different streets in the village, as well as by the teachers.
But are you concerned, Hal, that, you know, about sort of an ongoing commitment at the River School, or how do you see it?
Well, what I'm asking is, how can we open not charter schools, but all schools to environmental education about immediate threats like climate change that don't seem so immediate to a lot of people?
Yeah. Hal, thank you. Let me let Joel, because I've got other calls to get to. Thank you, Hal. Joel Helfrich, go ahead.
So our school is based, again, on existing schools that work. One of those schools is a charter school in Connecticut called Common Ground Charter School. It's a high school. And there are three components to that school. There's the school itself. They also have a environmental education center. And then they also have a working CSA, so a community supported agriculture. And so, and that's all with under this umbrella of the school. And we think that we can do similar things here. What's important about that is that school then and that environmental education center then acts as a resource for the mm-hmm. district. And so you wouldn't have to necessarily expect teachers to give more of their time or try and find extra time somewhere. Instead, you know, our school could become a place for other district schools to send their kids, whether that was for field trips or programming or what have you. So we see ourselves as a resource for the district, and we think that we can get there.
All right, before I get back to your calls, I want to sneak in at least one more here. David Hirsch, you mentioned environmental education earlier. We've had past programs that examine the fact that climate change, for example, is vastly undertaught in schools in some ways because teachers don't seem they always understand it, or they feel like they have to sort of teach both sides. There's all kinds of issues with it. Mm-hmm. Joel School is saying we're already addressing that out of the gate here. But overall, do you see an issue with the way environmental education is taught in this country?
Yes. Now, there is an issue in that it's often not taught very well.
Yeah.
There's not much attention given to it. And I think what Joel's talking about is also the possibility of maybe the teachers in that school could go into other schools, and that
sure.
what we need is some kind of ongoing group that talks about how to do this in schools
right.
and gets beyond teaching out of the textbook and focusing on ways to raise these different kinds of issues, and makes it so that it's one of the ways that the environment gets taught is it focuses on the science, and it separates it from ethical issues, historical issues, political issues, philosophical issues. So it needs to be integrated in a major part of the curriculum. And
yeah.
we really need a transformation of how we teach the environment in schools.
All right, Stuart in Rochester. Got to make it tight. Go ahead, Stuart.
Sure, yeah. I'm a big believer in involving students in the process of deciding what's best for them. And it was great that the city did it with the code of conduct. And I'm just wondering how much energy has been spent asking the students what they need in regards to a school such as this.
Good question, Stuart. Thanks very much. Joel Helfrich?
So one of our board members actually worked on the code of conduct with the district and actually teaches social justice and alternatives to violence programs and
restorative justice practices. Yeah, I recall.
And so we are already thinking about how do we deal with discipline in the school and what policies can we have and how can we engage students in peer, not only peer review, but also peer discipline and peer, I'm at a loss for words here.
But you're in, to Stuart's question, are you involving students in the process?
The plan is, you know, if we're successful, we're able to open the school. The plan is to involve students in this process. And also figure out ways in which to, you know, have teacher, you know, a teacher-led school to an extent. How can we involve students and teachers and also parents in our school in a deep mm-hmm. way? So we are thinking about those things, and we will continue to do so.
All right, we've learned a lot this hour about this process that is ongoing, and we'll see here. Joel, I'm going to 10-second question here. Question and answer in 10 seconds. What's the time frame? I mean, have you set a deadline? When do you want to be able to raise that $50,000, for example?
As soon as we can. So we are planning to apply to the SUNY Charter School Institute.
Okay.
And there's not been a new request for proposals. So if we had that $50,000 today, we would be working on writing the application in the hopes that we could get authorized at the next request for proposals and open doors in 2018.
Thanks for coming in and sharing the story. I know a lot of people have been following it over the last couple of years. Joel Helfrich is the co-founder of the Rochester River School, and you can learn a lot more at rochesterriverschool.org if you like. Thank you, Joel. Nice talking to you here.
Thank you for having me on.
David Hirsch from the Warner School at the University of Rochester. Thank you, David. Much
Thank
appreciated
you.
As well. I did not know about some of your own personal history with this as well. All the 600-page proposals and community interest. It's a story that actually goes back a lot farther than just the River School's efforts. All right, short break. More Connect is next.